Welcome to a Fear the Boot bonus episode. Our bedtime stories have been fairly popular, so we're going to try something a little bit different. Today, we are going to tell you our irresponsible bedtime stories. So I want you guys to take your iPods or your whole desktop PC setup, whatever you have, take it into bed, tuck yourself in, turn out the lights.
Turn off the monitor.
Turn off the computer. Turn the computer back on when you realize you need it to play the episode.
But if you're listening to this in your car, don't turn off your lights.
Light a candle, especially if you're in a car or an office environment or the sewer district. And we're going to tell you stories to help you fall asleep about the absolutely retarded things we've done. Now, we still have Johan with us.
Hello.
Chris is not with us. The only thing that's going to change is these stories will be more about crimes of vandalism, violence, and negligence more than sex crimes.
So, and also, they will have happened in at least the 1900s.
Yes, indeed. That is correct. None of these stories will involve bloomers within their proper context. So, who should we start with? Johan?
I say we start with Pat.
Pat!
I don't think that'd be a good idea since I haven't thought of anything yet.
Pat's being silly. He's pretending he's never done anything dumb in his life, despite growing up around cow patties, electric fences, and...
I'm not pretending I haven't done anything dumb, just nothing worth listening to that I can think of at the moment. It's something I'm willing to share.
All right, fine then. Fine. Pat's being a vag. I guess I'll go ahead and start with a story from the Wayback Machine of Dan and Chad. Dan and Chad learn how to make napalm. For anyone who doesn't know how to make napalm, I'm not going to tell you because I think there actually is some crime involved in me divulging the rest.
I don't think that there's a crime involved, but in their current socio-political climate, it's probably best.
If you don't know how to make it, I'm not going to tell you, except to say that it can be done with household items is all I'm going to say, because that is somewhat relevant to the context of the story. So Chad and I, back when we were in high school, I believe, we lived in a nice upper middle class suburban area, but this was in the day before total suburban sprawl. And so there were still things like common grounds and woods that surrounded all these different little subdivisions where you might have a subdivision that backs up to a mile or so of woods or fields or whatnot. And one day while I was over at Chad's house, we decided that we were going to attempt to make napalm. And the only ingredient I'm going to mention in this, because I kind of have to for the story to make sense, is that it does require gasoline. Now, this is only relevant in that we go out to the woods, make the napalm, and while we're doing it, we are making it in this container that is shaped something like a casserole dish, Chris, and is filled with regular unleaded gasoline, just like poured straight out of the gas can you'd use for a lawnmower. And the irony of this story is that the napalm itself is done perfectly safely, so to speak. In that we make this napalm.
Oh, yeah.
We make this napalm. We burn it in very careful...
IEEE regulations the whole...
This is exactly what the fire marshal and police department and Homeland Security all completely recommend. Yeah. Is we make this... We burn it in this completely controlled, safe way. We're real careful about what we do with everything. There are no problems, safety hazards whatsoever.
Other than teenagers
playing with napalm. But that aside, nothing goes wrong. We're real careful. We're very intelligent about it until we're done. And I decide, you know what, we've got this leftover thing of gasoline sitting right here. Might as well go ahead and burn it off. So I light a match, drop it towards this thing of gasoline, and as it's falling, there's like this movie moment where everything slows down to this frame-by-frame morphine scene, and my brain's like, that container's plastic. And then the match hits the gasoline and the gasoline goes up and of course starts spreading to burning through and melting through the plastic container that it's in. So looking around us, we pretty quickly locate a piece of press board. mm-hmm. which is kind of like particle board, for those of you who aren't familiar with what press board is. And it's maybe 4 foot by 6 foot. So we take the logical thing of, well, we can smother the flames using this thing. We'll just put it over the top of this gasoline container, and it'll smother the flames out, which probably would have worked, except right next to this container, there just so happened to be a rock that was maybe an inch taller than the container. So we throw this piece of press board over the container, and instead of smothering it, it's like bellows. It just goes down, and with this great gust of air, whoosh, and the flames go out in every direction. And we're jumping on it and stomping on it, trying to get it to work. And with each stop, it's just whoosh, whoosh, and this wave of flames is getting blown out into these woods. This is fall. There are 6 inches of dead leaves all over the ground. And by this point now, this fire has spread beyond the original container to some of these leaves. And there is now a column of smoke rising from these woods. And once again, to keep this in perspective, we are not in the middle of nowhere. This is the middle of a subdivision. And there is a column of smoke rising amongst these houses. So Chad and I, in an appropriate panic, go tearing towards the edge of these woods, towards his house. Being the slick teenagers we are, stop at the edge of the woods and rock real calm and cool and casual, like nothing's going on, and we have no idea what, you know, anyone might be upset about. Go into his house, get a fire extinguisher. With a fire extinguisher, walk real calm and cool back towards these woods from which a column of smoke is arising, acting like nothing's going on, nothing's wrong. Mm-hmm. Hit the edge of the woods and run like chickens with our heads cut off in this total panic back towards this fire. It is an act of God that fire did not spread. I, to this day, do not know how that fire did not spread with the amount of raw kindling all around, but it didn't. So Chad takes a fire extinguisher. We put out the fire, clean up the mess, make like hell out of there, and pretend like nothing happened now with our mess successfully taken care of. And Chad puts the fire extinguisher back in the garage.
And much to the credit of our neighbors, I guess no one ever called the fire department about this huge column of smoke coming out of the middle of the woods.
Or the police. Or
the police or
even
anything.
Even seemed to notice.
Yeah, no one.
So, way to go, Subdivision Watch.
Yeah. 10,000 people in South County and no one sees a fire.
They're so busy staring at each other's lawns and bedroom windows. Yeah. They didn't notice the woods on fire. So the capstone to this story is, so of course, we had to expend part of a fire extinguisher to control
a pretty good amount
burn. Yes. And Chad's dad served in the airborne in Nam.
Well, not during the Vietnam War. He didn't actually go over. But okay. Yes, he was airborne.
I understand he has a great ammo box that you can use to keep dice in.
Filled with, it was Arkham Horror.
Right.
Yes, yes.
And so he, for no particular reason other than the fact that he inspects everything in the household, mm-hmm. happens to notice a matter of days later that this fire extinguisher is missing a significant portion of its charge. And in one of those great moments of why dice matter in social situations, Chad rolls a wonderful critical success on his bluff check, and his dad rolls critical failure on intelligence or I don't know what, but his dad happens to notice that this fire extinguisher is missing a significant portion of its charge and asks Chad, who's an only child, mind you, so there's not a whole lot of other people in the household that would use the fire extinguisher.
We don't even have pets. I couldn't even blame the dog on this somehow.
But says, Chad, the fire extinguisher is kind of low. Do you know anything about that? And Chad just goes, they leak over time. And his dad buys another one. Never mind the fact that, first of all, these things don't leak over time. And secondly, if they did, you'd have a huge amount of fire retardant all over the floor.
I think that's probably the only time in my whole life I was ever actually able to pull one over my dad. You people with siblings are lucky.
There was the eggs.
The eggs.
We'll come back to that story. We'll come back to the story of the eggs and China golf. But first, it's somebody else's turn. Johan, since you're here and we don't have you all the time, you have a great story about... Oh, you got a couple great stories you were telling us over dinner. Pick one you want and go ahead and get started.
Well, we'll continue on the napalm theme. I as well have been known to create napalm in my youth, may have done so once or twice, and that napalm may or may not have been applied to cars. One particular instance, there was a lovely old Volkswagen Bug that for one reason or another we decided just had to go. And so several of us went out and we spent a nice day beating on it with sledgehammers and hatchets and Jeeps. at which time we hauled the wreckage of it to the backyard of my friend's property. And we sat down and started making our preparations, which did include a fairly sizable batch of a couple gallons of napalm, as well as several gallons of gas, several gallons of diesel, the entire stock of used motor oil from all of the oil changes that had been done over the past couple of years.
Gotta do some with it.
Right, right. Well, lumber that's hanging around, brushwood.
Totally how the EPA recommends you dispose.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Use motor I think it's on their website.
Yeah,
burn it on a different car. That way, that car's not consuming gas anymore. It's totally carbon neutral.
Exactly, exactly. So when night comes, we take the remains of the car, stuff it full of brushwood that's been laying around, just waiting to be shoved into a car.
Well, yeah.
And pour the napalm on, light it on fire. Works great. Beautiful bonfire. Then we realize two things. One of these things is that Volkswagens have magnesium transaxles. I don't know if anyone's ever seen magnesium burn.
Well, not for long, they haven't.
Not for long, they probably haven't, because normally you see it in the form of the little fire starters that flash up for a few seconds, and they get your campfire going. They're great. This was enough that it burned for a good solid hour. Brighter than the sun.
To put this in perspective, for anyone that has not seen magnesium burn, when I was in high school, we had a chemistry class where sometimes we might take some of the chemicals home that we weren't supposed to. And I got a hold of a strip of magnesium that was not a whole lot thicker than a thick piece of paper. I mean, maybe like poster board at most. It was maybe an inch long and like an eighth of an inch wide. I mean, it was a tiny little strip. I burned it in the fireplace. And yet this tiny, tiny little specimen of magnesium burned so bright and so hot that number one, I could not look at it. And number two, it defaced the bricks of the fireplace. To this day,
I'm surprised you didn't burn a hole through the brick.
To this day, there is a mark on the bricks of my parents' fireplace. Man, I'm glad they don't listen to these shows. That came from me burning stolen magnesium in their fireplace. So just to put this in perspective, and that was a tiny little strip, not a transaxle.
Right. So we've got this fire going that is slightly bright and slightly hot. To give you an idea of the heat, magnesium does burn slightly hotter than your average blowtorch. It burns about 3,000 degrees. So we come up with the brilliant idea, seeing this going, that we'd like to see what would happen if we hit it with a stick. So we proceed to dig up about a 10-foot long 2x4 and take turns beating on the transaxle, which is glowing bright enough that you could barely look at it to begin with, even look in its general direction. Anytime you would hit it with anything, it would light up so bright that you could not look at the building that was next to the fire because the reflection off of the metal siding was too bright to see. It was ludicrous. Even without hitting it, it was brighter than daylight around this fire, by far.
That is awesome.
Oh, it was fantastic.
And he's not exaggerating. I wasn't there for this, but I've seen magnesium burn. He's not exaggerating.
No. It was shortly after the magnesium transaxle caught fire that we realized the second issue, which is that there had been a stash of car parts in the back seat, which were racing parts, which all had magnesium casings. So those go up too. At this point, this is such a ridiculous fire hazard that I can't imagine what a fire department would have thought had anyone showed up. Luckily, this is out in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure every neighbor from 20 miles around could see it going on. They just don't care. So, you know, we're bored and alcohol may have been involved. So we're looking for other things to do. We start simple enough. You know, we dip rags in the motor oil. We make torches because obviously it's not bright enough. We've got to light things up a little bit and, you know, get some illumination going. We've got those set up. And then we decide, you know, what's going to be really great? We should really get this fire going a little higher.
Mm-hmm.
What way do you use to get this fire going a little higher?
More fuel.
Gasoline. More fuel.
Yeah. Wow.
Gasoline it is. So we go back to this several gallons of gasoline we've got in the shed. And I believe the first idea we had was we found one of the old super soakers. Probably circa 1990 super soakers with the 2-gallon backpack and the pump action shot. Fill it up with gasoline and go spray down the fire.
Now, for anyone who's not really good with hydrodynamics, let me stop and give a little physics lesson. And this is coming courtesy of my mother, who works in a level 1 trauma center, stitching back up people who do dumb things. If you have a liquid that is flammable and you put it on a fire, that fire will tend to follow the liquid back to its source because it is flammable. The only way around this is to create significant pressure such that the force of the liquid moving forward is more than the speed of the fire moving backwards. All right, that's probably not exactly right with the physics, but it's something along those lines, which is why you should never do a slow trickle of a flammable liquid onto a flame because it will trace it right back to the source. And well, let's just say that it doesn't work out as cool as it does in the superhero movies. So please continue.
At any rate, my friend straps this backpack on and goes to town dousing the fire. It's great fun. But after probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 refills, strangely enough, it stops working, probably because the nozzle had melted closed. How this did not end in a horrific explosion, I am still baffled by. But we no longer have a super soaker, and that fire's looking mighty dim. So we go rummaging for something to use, and we find some Walmart plastic bags. And, well, those will hold liquid, won't they? Pour some gasoline in those, whip them around like we were Ewoks taking down stormtroopers, and just throw them at that car.
Nice.
Which each time would end up with about a 15-foot eruption of flame out of the top of this car. Once again, I can't imagine how no one called the fire department. If this had happened any time recently, I would have to assume that we would have been called in as terrorists 10 times over. But then we run out of plastic bags. And by that point, it's well later in the night and the fire legitimately is dying down. And we can't have that. That's ridiculous. So we scrounge up some more, you know, scrap wood and various whatever we could find that looked flammable to toss in the car. But it wasn't lighting up appropriately. The fire just wasn't hot enough anymore. So that leads us to our final act of brilliance for the night.
Hand grenades.
No. Direct application of gasoline to the fire via gas can.
Nice.
Walked right up to it, just started sloshing it right onto the fire. And after about 20 seconds of doing so and getting the fire, you know, getting stoked up again, I happened to look down at my feet and realized that the gas vent on the gas can was open on the back. So the whole time I'm sloshing this gasoline onto the fire, it is also sloshing right back out the back, and I am covered from thigh to toe in gasoline, standing 5 feet away from a burning car.
Nice.
That didn't really bother me. I just closed up the gas can, put it back in the garage, and we continued to have our bonfire. But that was the pinnacle of insanity for the night.
See, and I told you this at dinner, and I mean it again today. I think we really missed out living in white suburbia, Dan. We really should have lived in the country. There, we could just get away with all this crap. I mean, we couldn't even do a fraction of this kind of stuff.
But there are some things that we could do right here in suburbia that didn't even have to involve napalm, but could just involve...
The devil, you say.
Simple things like eggs. Now,
you told me I have an egg story, and I don't remember an egg story.
Okay. Many of you hearing us say eggs may think this is a story about us egging someone's house.
I have never egged someone's house.
No, we have not.
I've never even teepeed somebody's house, actually.
Nor have I.
And the reason I have not, and I've actually had the opportunity to go teepeeing many times in my life, but I had neighbors, the Millses?
Yeah,
the girls,
I know who you're talking about.
They had a large family. And the family ranged in age. It was all girls. I think there were five of them. And yes, I grew up next to five neighbor girls who were actually pretty attractive, who from very, very young all the way up to 18 and every age in between, didn't hit on a single one. Because they were very popular.
If only the mic would have picked that
up.
Yeah,
if only Pat talked into a mic. Go on, Chad.
But because they were very popular, they're very pretty. They were very, very involved in all their different school activities, everything from cheerleading to prom planning and all that sort of stuff.
And they didn't notice you trying to look in their windows.
You know, I never did that.
I totally would have, but that's
you
just
are such a disappointment to the male race.
You know how much I wanted to have hot neighbor girls growing up? Every house I ever lived in as a kid was completely cut off from view of any neighbor. And even the ones that were out of view were old.
I had elderly woman and two teenage boys, one on either side. There was no looking in windows for me either.
Yeah, I mean, these were all, if I remember right, hot blonde chicks. I mean, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you remember the Mills?
Close. Girls? Yeah, that's not exactly right. Yeah, that's close.
Well, what, they weren't hot or they weren't blonde?
Both.
You know, okay. I never really talked to these people.
The impression, I'm seeing a picture here. Back in the day, you know, like these girls, like you said, mm-hmm. once they were of certain age, you know, they were of age and legal, whatever else like that, they could be back in the backyard sunbathing, even topless, and Chad would just be like, oh, hey, and they just walk
you
in.
You know, they had a pool, nothing. And they had a deck.
Yeah, oh, my God.
We had a high fence. I'm sorry.
That is no excuse.
All right. You had a second floor, did you not?
Yes, I did.
You get a f***ing stepladder.
So... anyway, what I was trying to get at is I never teepeed anybody because these girls and their family was teepeed relentlessly. And I don't just mean like one rollers. I mean people getting a pallet from Sam's and doing it every season. And it was just from me as a young age all the way growing up, and people would say, hey, let's go teepeeing. I'm like, been there, done that, not really impressed.
Yeah,
I've seen the aftermath, and it's a pain in the ass.
For all of our irresponsible stories and all the craziness they may include.
Shut up, Pat.
Fine, Pat, go ahead. What?
Go ahead. What? What?
No,
Say penis. We know you want to.
Come on, now you've stopped the podcast. You're wasting the time of all the good Fear the Booters at home.
I was just going to agree with, you know, Chad, and then, you know, say that I was in the same situation. But no, that's right. It's more important for you to go. To go on.
What he meant to say was penis.
Penis. Chad needs people to agree with him to push forward. He's waiting for that positive feedback loop. I'm glad you bring that to the show. So, for all of our irresponsible stories, what none of them involve is the vandalism of anyone else's property.
Yeah.
For all the arson and other crazy things we will tell throughout the course of this fine evening as you guys are going off.
Sipping their Chianti. Yeah. And snuggling up with a warm podcast.
Correct. You guys are fading off into dreamland to dream of things like napalm and irresponsibility.
In a house full of hot chicks never be hit on.
Yes. All the things that make
when they were all frolicking in their pools, splashing each other in their bikinis.
And t-shirts. Yeah, Pat's going to be having nightmares about
it
this.
It meant
stuff.
Nothing to Chad. Oh, yeah, that's pretty
yeah, whatever.
Well, I'm going to go and play with my whatever.
Yeah, I was the only kid on my block with a Nintendo. F*** you. Yeah. I rocked. I was so cool.
I'm going to go and play Zelda.
Yes. You were there! Okay. Oh, my God!
So...
I hear if you get to the end of Metroid, you can see your boobs.
You know, Chad got to that point, and before it happened, he just shut her off. He wasn't interested.
Same reason on its own DOA Extreme 2 that turns out the nudie code was an April Fool's joke. But so anyway, so I don't know how we came to this conclusion. This is one of these brilliant junior high or high school sort of things that people come up with. But somehow we came up with this brilliant conclusion that you can take an egg, and if you shake it hard enough without actually breaking the egg, you can break the yolk inside, thus making the egg less useful for cooking.
I did this?
We both did this. I have no idea how, despite our combined 500 IQ, we came up with this fact. But somehow we came up with this fact.
I don't remember this at all. So, what did we do?
So
what was I doing in the 80s?
So we...
Not looking at chicks.
So we were in your parents' kitchen, going through the fridge, taking every egg out and shaking it as hard as we possibly could without actually breaking the egg.
Why would we do this?
And I'll let you guess how this story ends. We lose grip on one of the eggs.
Now, mind you, let's rewind to a previous topic here that, again, I have no recollection of the story, but let's talk about my dad for a second. I love my dad. My dad is detail-oriented.
Oh, yes. And so, I don't remember which of us did it, but one of us lost grip on one of these eggs, and it hits the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And just, of course, being an egg, a raw egg, splatters everywhere. And so, we're like, oh, hell.
Is this when I had that party?
No, it was just you and me.
No?
It was just you and me BS and wasting time.
All right.
And so it hits the floor, splatters everywhere, and we manage to clean up a portion of it, and then we hear the garage door. And we're like, oh, hell, because there's the garage, and beyond the garage, it basically opens more or less directly into the kitchen. I mean, there's a little entrance foyer, but it more or less opens pretty directly. I mean,
why couldn't we tell him we just dropped an egg?
I don't know, but we didn't. His parents are going to come directly through the kitchen to get to anywhere in the household, if for no other reason than just to say hi to us. And so, of course, we've got this splattered egg all over the floor. This is another one where I swear we rolled critical success, they rolled critical failure, because it was Chad and I both and his parents both. And what we had done was we had taken rags, mm-hmm, and put them under our shoes, and we're sitting there, like, every time they'd, like, look at the mail, we'd be sweeping our feet back and forth really quick, and then they'd look at us, and we'd stop, and they'd, like, look at the thermostat, and then we'd be sweeping our feet back and forth, and then they'd go look at something else or walk out of the room, we'd be sweeping our feet back and forth, until finally using these two rags, we cleaned up the splattered egg from the floor.
Why did we do that?
You're a couple idiots.
Apparently.
You know, if you were outside watching the neighbor girls, that would have never happened.
Yeah, yeah. So did we actually break a yolk in the egg without...
I have no idea. I don't know if we ever followed up on this story to find out what happened the next time they went to break open an egg. Does it work? I have no idea. This is for the next generation coming up to investigate. We have taken unified egg theory as far as we can take it. We need a new generation of students to take up this mission.
And if I could just say to all the kids at home, just look at the neighbor girls. It'll be much better. Well, don't forget the eggs.
Unlike napalm, I can tell you to shake eggs without fear of DHS. So... go ahead, shake all the eggs and tell us what happens. So, Pat, are you ready yet? Have your balls finally dropped? No?
Or is it just shame for your fellow host?
So, all right, Wayne, do you have one?
I have multiple ones, but I know the one Chad wants me to tell.
Oh,
so I'll
hell
start
yeah.
With that. Okay, so you know how back in the 90s or so, you would always hear those stories about the kids that are doing the backyard wrestling and all that?
Not looking at chicks.
Yeah, they were idiots. We were doing it in a basement. So I had a group of friends.
Cole, when you did backyard wrestling, now I ask this for the fans' sake because I already know the answer. Did you do backyard wrestling in your cape and fangs?
No.
You weren't the vampire wrestler?
No.
Okay.
Did you have a wrestler name?
No.
Aw.
Went through the process of endangering your life and the life of other children, and you didn't even give yourself a wrestler name?
No, but I had entrances and gimmicks.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah. So the way this whole thing started was...
Let's stop. Entrance and gimmicks. Let's start there.
I had two two separate ones.
Okay.
One of them was all the lights would get turned off. Uh-huh. They would play the Brood's music, which was think like Undertaker type.
Okay.
And I would walk out with the two black gloves and my head down, and I would walk out basically an Undertaker-type entrance.
Okay.
The other entrance
I'm
was...
I'm so embarrassed right now. I don't know why.
you should wait for that. The other entrance was hitting Shawn Michaels' sexy boy music, and I would come out dancing to that.
Chad, we're not gay anymore.
Actually, my story does involve a girl as well.
Ooh, see that right there, you go. So right there, you're head and heels over Chad, who doesn't look at girls.
The way this whole thing started was I had a bunch of friends that did this as a regular thing, and I'm hearing about it. I'm like, man, these guys are stupid. I've got to go witness this myself. And I go there thinking I'm just going to make fun of them about this later. So by the end of the night, I decide I'm going to take part in the Royal Rumble. I'm watching. I was like, this looks kind of fun. So, you know, it gets my turn to go in, and I see a guy there trying to push someone else out of the ring. So I get a full running start, leap through the air, and bury my knees into his back, which he proceeds to yell and isn't too happy about. Next thing I know, this guy that's probably about 6'10 at that point decides he's just going to kick me in the stomach, flip me in the air, and have me land on my back on the outside, which he proceeds to do. And that was my experience in the Royal Rumble the first time. Despite that, I decide, okay, that was actually kind of fun. I'm going to do this again. So I go back the next time, and this is where we had the entrances and all that going. And in one match, this guy brought his sister. And she's in there taking part in this thing. So I'm in there with her, and I'm just kind of playing around. And she's really cute, you know. So I'm playing around, and finally, I get knocked down, and she climbs up on my chest and is sitting there, and she's like, you're not trying to kick out. I look at her, I look her straight in the eye, and I go, why would I? During the course of that night, I got rope burn on my arm. I had barbed wire wrapped around my neck. And at the time, I'm reaching up, I'm pushing against the barbed wire to keep from being choked. And the moment someone hits him so he gets it off of me, I turn around and I kick him into the furnace. And I mean, this is one of these big square furnaces. And he hits this with enough force that the thing is dented.
Let's back up to your guys' game involved barbed wire.
No one expected it. It wasn't normal.
No one expected it.
Does that make it more effective? Nobody saw it coming. It had the element of surprise.
Well, you know, he was obviously a heel. When the ref had his back turned, he pulled the barbed wire out of his pocket and started to garrot Wayne with it.
It was one guy that went too far, basically.
I think you all went too far.
Well, that's because we did. And we had one guy, we had a stop sign there. And we had one guy that we're telling him, okay, we're going to hit the lights and we're going to play the music. And we have this little strobe light and we're going to turn it on. And the moment we do that, what we want you to do is just step back. We're going to jump in and we're going to beat up your opponent. So we get this all set up and the guy's in there. He's all excited because he's in on it. We hit the lights, hit the music, hit the siren thing. He steps back into my chest, turns around, and I just hear him say, oh, as everyone just kind of jumps on this guy and then drops him over on the stop sign. And that was my experience with basement wrestling.
I thought how the story was going to be you were going to clock him with the stop sign, which would be...
No, they picked him up and actually dropped him onto the stop sign. Because basically the setup was there were mattresses down there. So if people were being slammed, they were being slammed onto mattresses and nobody was seriously
hot
hurt.
Girl. Mattresses.
Oh yeah.
What happened? You start wrestling around with a bunch of dudes in barbed wire.
Oh, hey, I wrestled around.
Well,
with
hey,
her.
You know what? Whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah. Mind you, everyone was afraid to touch her because she's a girl, and me, I have no problem with that. And
we're not here to judge Pat, so.
Really, it's not that bad of a story. It's just a bunch of stupid people in a basement. I've heard worse.
Well, I've seen like YouTube videos of backyard wrestlers and such where they've got those big long fluorescent bulbs put up on sawhorses and they're jumping off of the roof of their one-story garage into these so it's a more shatter effect and they get little cuts on them so they're bleeding.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They're not like super bleeding or anything.
We never jumped off anything higher than a bar stool.
Yeah, and just for the record, in case anyone is a complete idiot, we are not suggesting you attempt any of this.
Well, Wayne is, but...
Well, no. Yeah. Wayne wants you to do all of this and put it on YouTube for his amusement. The rest of us, we love you. Oh, goodness gracious. Okay.
Okay, I've got another if no one else has one.
Oh, no, well, hold on. Don't forget it. I think it's Pat's turn.
You know, I'm listening to these stories, and I'm amazed that more than half of you are still alive. But that's, I don't know. I, of course, had the fascination with fire, just like any red-blooded male child has. But I guess the difference for me is I grew up in the country, and, well, we burned everything. We burned our trash. We, you know, any kind of trash or whatever, we just burn it. So, and that was, that got to be my job.
That thinks this whole will it blend YouTube meme is completely
f-ing awesome.
No, it is wrong because it ought to be will it burn.
Well, and so yeah, it's like for me,
I don't think they can sell and market fire.
They do have, should you microwave this?
Nice, yeah,
that's a pretty
nice.
Good one.
Okay, I like that. Continue, Pat.
I mean,
although I have to say real quick that the will it blend iPad edition was freaking hilarious.
It was, yeah.
Glow sticks is my favorite, though. Go on.
No, but so, yeah, I got to burn all kinds of crap, and that kind of got to be my job, too. So I would take the trash over to the trash. I mean, literally, we had a junk pile over on part of our property. We took it over there and just burned it. I'm talking everything. The trash, the stuff that you guys throw away now and put on the curb, or the stuff that you recycle, that shit all got burned. Mm. And that got to be my job. So that was pretty freaking awesome. And so I sort of got to vent my pyrotechnic urges in a little bit more safe ways. Although I did have some gas stories where I remember my first experience with gas was I thought it would be pretty cool to you know, because I knew gas would burn. So I got a little bit in a plastic container, and I took it down on the driveway, and I had my G.I. Joe set up, and I had the you know, the G.I. Joe tank that would go on its own. So I thought, well, this needs to go through some fire. So I poured some gas down there in the container and lit it on fire. And I got to learn, you know, my early thermodynamic lesson was the fact that it's not the liquid that's burning, it's the fumes and the ensuing fireball that nearly burned off my eyebrows. That's the real
that's
danger.
That's why you have real light eyebrows.
Gasoline,
nowadays.
Yeah. It's that's the danger. So yeah, I've had that. But so yeah, as far as burning, that was it. But I guess probably the stupidest thing that I did is, and I don't know, I can't remember exactly what they're called, but they're not like a quarter stick of dynamite. They're a small, they're about as big around as like the fat crayons, I guess, mm-hmm. You know, the bigger crayons, and about maybe 4 inches long. And they're used in farming stuff a lot. I think one of the uses that farmers use for them is like, I think like scaring birds. Well, they launch these things up, they're lit, it's a fuse, and they blow, and they make a lot of noise. But they're probably as powerful, I don't know, maybe an eighth of a stick of dynamite or something like that. They're definitely something that if you were to let it go off in your hand, you wouldn't have a hand anymore.
The things I've seen them blow up on the 4th of July, because I can get my hands on those too. I came from kind of a small town like you did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always our big thing, is what can we blow up on the 4th of July? And you get your hands on those, there's nothing you're going to get at the fireworks stand that can do half of what these.
Oh, yeah. These and these aren't even fireworks. These are literally, yeah. they're
a farm tool.
They're not controlled.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you can get them for valid use, like, sure. You know, but they're not fireworks by any means. They're, you know, they're even marked as such, sort of like a dynamite stick, you know, mm-hmm. highly dangerous, whatever like that. Well, so we had some, so I thought, and I, at some point I had seen, of course, you know, the technique of dynamite fishing. And yeah. I had a 2-acre catfish pond on the property, and I thought, well, me. It has to be tried. And so I got some of this and I you know, and of course they always,
you're not going to do it, who will?
And yeah, so, and you know, of course they do it in a boat. Mm-hmm. And I had a rowboat, so I get in the rowboat and I row out in the middle of into the middle of the lake, you know, and getting ready to do this thing. And I did it a couple times and it didn't really do much, because I don't know how, you know, bubble up a little bit. But I remember I threw one of them in, and thing about a rowboat is you can be out in the middle of the pond, and if there's a good enough wind, you're actually, it will be moving just by the wind pushing it, so you don't really kind of know it. And these things have a fuse on. They're a longer fuse. They're meant to burn for like anywhere from 10 to 15 or 20 seconds. So they'll go for a while, and they do burn underwater, obviously, because it's part of it. So so I threw one out there and it's going off, and I didn't realize I was moving, and like one of the, it went off sort of under the boat. It didn't capsize the boat or anything, but it kind of freaked me out. So after that, I kind of decided maybe I better not do this before.
Did any fish come up?
Kill myself. I think I killed one or two, so, but it didn't, it wasn't nearly as exciting as I thought it would be.
It wasn't like the movies where they throw a whole stick in there.
Yeah, and you see
hole.
Like a big geyser of water. It was relatively disappointing, so.
This is a portent of things to come.
You are a hayseed.
I know.
You actually grew up on a farm, right?
I did.
Not just a house in the country.
We had like 40 acres of hay fields and beef cattle. It was not like a you know, dairy farm or anything like that.
Industrial farm.
It was not an industrial. It was just a personal farm. But yeah, a farm. So yeah, I grew up on a farm.
Cool. Hayseed.
So those are kind of some of the stupid things that I'd done that I'm willing to share.
Okay, so growing up, I was always a big fan of the TV show Dukes of Hazzard. My brother was as well. So like,
this is always the start of a great story.
Yep. So like growing up,
either about moonshine or cars.
I would say the number of people. Once again, my mom working in a level one trauma center. The number of stories she has told me over the years to start off with the Dukes of Hazzard.
So like growing up, my brother would do things like he'd drive us through fields. Like there was a hayfield at the bottom of our hill that he would drive us through until somebody put like nails in there and all. So basically, that was the mindset I had grown up with.
Wow.
Yeah, somebody put nails in the field and we ended up with four flat tires.
Damn.
We were actually
awesome.
We were at the grocery store. We walked out and all the tires were flat, and we get home, and after having the car towed back, the guy from down at the bottom of the hill walks up and he's like, "So, I see you got some flat tires. Somebody's been driving through my field." Just saying.
You know, I'm one of those bitter old bastards, much like Chris is now, that I if I were ever, like, if I, God forbid, I lived, like, on a corner, you know, like a street corner where you've sort, you know, your yard is right down to the corner. Oftentimes, little bastards will drive over the corner, like, through your yard, you know, goddamn kids. Mm-hmm. If I lived there, I would get one of these 500-pound boulders, you know, put it right there at the corner, paint it white and build a snowman on top of it in the wintertime and just sit there in my front window naked waiting just to watch these stupid bastards run into it with their daddy's Mercedes.
In one hand is a cup of cocoa and we can't tell you what's
exactly
in the other.
That's all I'm saying. It would be on video.
So anyway, that's the mindset I grew up with from riding around with my brother-in-law. So when I got my first car, it was a 1987 Buick Skyhawk. So the first thing I do is I take this thing out and I get an air horn put in it that plays Dixie. So I drive around.
Backyard wrestling. Vampire fangs in a cape. And you drove around in a car that played Dixie. Wayne, you are the country Hoosier superhero.
If he doesn't have a white hood in his closet somewhere, I would be just shocked beyond
belief. You would
belief.
Be shocked because I don't. So anyway, naturally, the first thing I think with this is, oh, hey, there's some hills around. I'll see if I can jump these. So I make it kind of a habit for a while. If I get a good speed at the top of hills and I, you know, maybe an inch off the ground if I'm lucky, no big deal. This story continues as all good stories do. And there's a girl sitting next to me in the car and I'm trying to impress her. And I've got some friends driving behind me and we're coming up on some train tracks. And she's like, "Gun it, jump the tracks." Okay. So I'm sitting there, you know, in my car. I slam on the gas. I'm maxing this thing, and I'm doing probably 90, 95 right before I hit the train tracks. I hit the horn to hit the music. At this point, I hit the tracks. It's one of those type of train tracks where it is raised up quite a bit. And the moment I'm in the air, the thought goes through my mind, like Dan was describing earlier, where the, you know, everything just freezes. I have this thought, wow, this was a bad idea.
Taking off's great. Landing?
Yeah. Then we slam
into... redneck man? That's a hard thing to do.
We slam into the ground. My car makes sounds it should never make. And
like Dixie?
Oh, no, that was normal. Oh, and it was a programmable one, too, so it could also play La Cucaracha.
So, that horn was so
damn. So we slam into the ground. I slam on my brakes. So I finally come to a stop. The people behind us come out. They're like, "Man, that was awesome. You were 3 feet off the ground." So then I turn the car back on and the engine's going, never sounded the same again. The car was like I said, it was a 1987 Buick Skyhawk. So the thing was built like a tank. It could have taken just about anything. Except for a 3 foot off the ground jump.
Wow. And from that point forward, the horn only played Battle Hymn of the Republic.
I never did pull the horn out of that one either. I would have liked to have had it for my second car, but it died with that first one.
You should get one for your Grand Prix.
No, I'm not the same teenager I was when I wanted a musical horn.
So, years ago, it's amazing, none of these stories are recent. I don't have any a lot of recent.
Yeah, because we have
statute of limitations.
We've got like families and jobs and stuff.
Yeah, we kind of wised up.
So...
Shut up, Pat.
Several years ago, a friend of ours, he inherits a house from his grandfather. Mm-hmm. Why it skipped over his father is just a story. It's not my place to tell, and I'll just leave it up to your imagination. But nonetheless, he does inherit his grandfather's house. So we decide that we are going to spend a summer cleaning this place up because his grandfather had been suffering from pretty severe dementia for about a decade. And this place had not been cleaned at all. Yeah. I'm talking, it was a filthy, filthy place. The guy was so...
I wouldn't say that he was a shut-in, as he didn't have, like, rats and magazines stacked up to the ceilings with quarters. It wasn't like that at all. It just... Imagine living in a house and never cleaning it.
Yeah, just never at all vacuuming, dusting, whatever. I mean, to give you an idea of this guy's mental state... And I'm not making this up. He was doing his laundry in the dishwasher and drying it in the microwave. And I'm not making that up. And it was...
I think you're making it up. Oh, wait, I was there. Oh, no, you're not.
And it was underwear Easter. As we cleaned this house up, it was like an Easter egg hunt for underwear. Every drawer you opened, every closet you went into, every nook you peered into... had a pair of underwear, oftentimes clean underwear. I don't know if he was afraid that something would happen, he wouldn't find it. I have no idea what was going on. But we decided, you know what? This house belongs to Paul, who himself was a teenager. Maybe.
We were all like 18, 19 years old.
Yeah,
we
maybe
just out of
20
high school.
At tops, because Paul's a little older than we were. But we decided, hey, let's clean this place up and turn it into a great gaming haven. So we have a whole house to ourselves, no parents or anything, where we can do all the gaming we want. So we spent several months, I mean, just top to bottom, disinfecting, cleaning, vacuuming, sweeping, washed every dish, threw out every pair of underwear. I mean, just did incredible amounts of cleaning, including Chad and I had... the great bug war, where some of the house was overrun by bugs, so we were trying to throw bug bombs, and we had set off all the ones on the lower level, and we're going up the upper level to set those off, and there's this rising cloud of death coming up the stairs from the lower level.
And we're like, we didn't... I mean, it's like painting yourself into a corner, poison.
We realized we never put one in the attic, and... this was like something straight out of an action movie. Chad looks left, looks right, sees this cloud slowly rising up from the lower floor. We have no time as it is. Takes a bug bomb in his hand, just pops it like a hand grenade and tosses it up there. And we go running like hell for the door. But while we were cleaning this house, we happened to find his china. And I'm going to put this in loose quotation marks, because these were dishes straight out of the worst of the 60s and 70s. These were white plates that were predominantly covered with this kind of golden yellow colored and poop brown colored leaf print, like covered with this print.
They're
hideous. Things were a...
I'm sure they were worth thousands of dollars, but they were hideous.
These were a sin against God and man. I mean, these things ought not have been... They were made by an insane man who lived on an island and killed himself after making the press. I mean, these things ought not have been. So like any rational people, we found the golf clubs, we found the china, there was a front yard. We went out there and started playing china golf. And at some point, I think some trash may have been thrown over some fence or something like that. Eventually, the police showed up and...
not much happened.
It was all downhill from there.
That was an awesome experience for me. That whole summer. I mean, imagine a summer you're just like probably 2 years out of high school. I've already dropped out of college as it is. I think Dan dropped out of college too. And we were basically living with our parents trying to figure out what we wanted to do with our lives. And instead of like doing anything responsible, like getting jobs, going back to school, figuring out whatever, we decided to spend an entire summer cleaning this house.
Yeah, rehabbing a house.
Rehabbing a house with no supervision, no... anything. No, I mean, it was like this first bit of freedom. We didn't quite live there. We lived there a lot, but we weren't actually living there. We were dividing our time between staying there and staying at our parents' places. And we were just hanging out, having some parties, and pretty tame parties for us at that age. We, in our teenage years, we weren't the drinking, drug, whatever thing. I mean, that
pyromania, yes, but drinking, drugs, womanizing, not really.
Yeah, later, but I mean, it was like nerd heaven. We were cleaning our house, We were gaming there. We were gaming there every other night, just about, watching movies and stuff and hanging out at this pad. It was great.
Well, it was also belonged to an old guy, and so we'd find his photo albums of World War II pictures and stuff, and it was all really cool.
He was an engineer, if I remember right, and back before the days of CAD programs, and so he had all these like precision instruments and tons of tools and great old people stuff. He had tons of records. And all the records were like jazz and swing albums and stuff.
Yeah, like Johnny Mercer.
Yeah. It was a really, really cool summer. I had a very good time. House doesn't exist anymore.
No, it does not. It was bulldozed. Mm. But so stories about trashing places. I've got one, but Johan, I know you have one as well. Do you want to tell yours first or do you want me to tell mine first?
I actually can't tell that one.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
So, fair enough. Then I will tell ours because ours, while irresponsible, was technically legal. So we've mentioned, I think...
I was not a part of this, by the way.
I don't remember who all was there. We've mentioned on this podcast before that where we met Paul and many of his friends was he, despite being only a year or two or three older than us, owned a comic book store that was just down the street from our high school. And we spent a fair amount of time hanging out there. Well, eventually, due to financial mismanagement and borrowing a lot of the stock, shall we say, and whatnot.
Well, basically running a comic book shop, how comic book shops are run in the U.S.
Yeah, pretty much.
For the most part.
And the place ended up going under. And there was a bunch of other stuff going on. I don't know all the details, and at this point, it's really irrelevant. But the point is, a lot of stuff was going on, and the place went under. And so we went up there after it was closed down, and the lease was about to run out. And he still had all his display cases, some of the stock, a lot of posters.
All the display cases and stuff, all that crap in there belonged to him.
Yes, that's correct.
It didn't belong to the store.
Correct. That is correct. And so we kind of stop, take a look around, have this moment of zen. And we're like, has anyone ever trashed a store before? And we're like, no, we should totally trash this place. And so we were just knocking off the walls, knocking over display cases, tearing down posters. I discovered the fire extinguisher at some point, which was getting sprayed all over the place. I mean, just absolutely destroying this place, which was funny until several police cars show up outside. Apparently, someone driving by had seen what was going on and thought that the place was being robbed and vandalized. And only the latter part was true. And
but he was vandalizing his own stuff.
Property.
He wasn't actually vandalizing the store.
Correct. We weren't like punching holes in the wall. We were vandalizing stuff that he owned. And so the cops pull up and all these cops come running in and they hassle him. And he's like, no, this is my store. And they're like, yeah, BS, this is your store. And so he ends up having to go into the back, get out the lockbox, shows them the lease. And I was like, no, it really is my store.
And basically, he was a teenager, 18, 19 years old, who owned his own comic shop.
Yeah, and the cops...
Sounds great, unless you actually want to make any money at
it. Yeah, the problem is by that point in life, you probably don't have the business acumen and such to really make that work. And so the cops ended up showing up, and once he was able to prove to them that it really was his, they kind of took a look around and said, well, dumb as it may be, it's perfectly legal, and they got back in their cars and left. And we went back to trashing the store. But I will say, if you have never had the experience of just going hog wild and trashing a store, it is very, very fun.
I'll take your word for that.
You people are hooligans.
I know. Dio, I was not involved in this story, but every time I hear it, I just sit here and I judge. I judge you. But no, I sit here and I'm like, I wouldn't do that. I don't think I would have taken part in that. That just wanton destruction for destruction's own sake.
Oh, it was total catharsis.
Yeah.
In the worst possible way.
Well, haven't you ever paid money to destroy a car?
No.
Wow.
There's Johan.
No.
all he paid for is perfectly gasoline.
So, Wayne, you've paid money to destroy a car?
Yeah. Basically, at every fair we used to have, they'd have a fundraiser. You'd pay $10 and you'd get 5 minutes with the car. And they'd give you your choice of weapons. You just go over with you go over to the car with an axe, with a bat, with whatever you want, and just start bashing the thing.
That's not the kind of thing I pay for.
Like I said, Dan and I didn't live in the country. We didn't have country fairs that we
went
to.
They did this at the school as a fundraiser once.
See, we had a... There was a school
our
picnic.
Our school was not
had.
In the middle of a cornfield.
We had
Pat running around blowing up manure piles to the 1812 Overture. This is not the environment we were raised in.
I think I've mentioned my school
sucks to
you before.
Be you.
We didn't have like fields or anything. We had a lead smelter behind us. Like, it was bad enough.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, it is one of the largest.
Conducive to a good educational environment.
It is one of the largest
lead class smelters. Right there.
It is one of the largest lead smelting plants, and it releases. You could actually set your clock by
all kinds of toxins. Yeah, we know. Yeah,
a certain time of day, it releases it into the air. So if we were outside in gym class, if we had a white shirt on, we could put it over our mouth, and that there would be black marks on it from where we're breathing this thing in. To the point that our sporting events sometimes had to cancel events because the other team weren't used to the air quality.
Weren't used to the lead in the air.
That is an oxymoron in its purest form. Air quality.
Yeah.
Right next to a lead smelter.
You are dead on about the lead in the air. Every year they would have the choice of we can either clean up the environment or we can buy these houses further and further away.
I want to do a timeline for Wayne here just in case he doesn't see something.
Okay.
Lead smelter at school.
Yeah.
Cape and fangs.
Basement
car
wrestling.
That plays Dixie and basement wrestling.
Yeah.
Then you leave town. College education, wife, home, well-paying job.
Glutton Fest
was awesome by all accounts.
I don't think I've told
you. Before you get to Glutton Fest, okay. I just want to
Glutton
pause.
Fest is a tale of irresponsibility.
That's fine. Yes. We'll get to Glutton Fest.
And it's
Fest.
Within the last 5 years.
I just want to pause right now. You said we had to cancel sporting events because the other team wasn't used to the air. You are aware that people do not build up a resistance to lead.
Say what?
I hate to break down any of the...
Then what have I been snorting all these years?
I mean, you're preaching to the choir here, Dan. We didn't like
no,
being
I'm
in
No, I'm preaching
it.
To the poison.
We didn't like being in
it.
It wasn't like we liked being in it. We didn't have a choice. It was there.
I'm sorry. Glutton Fest. Go on.
Okay. This one is this one actually
the chewy metal.
It is kind of.
I reiterate. I am now at this point. I am amazed that all four of the people that I'm sitting here with are still alive. I'm amazed.
Okay. This story is within the last 5 years. Me and a batch of friends decided it would be an interesting idea to do an eating contest. So we picked this place called Penny's that has, it's known for their large portions of food. The food's pretty good, but the important thing was it was large portions of food. So we sit there, we all gather around, we make a weekend of this where we've got all these people watching us. There are only three of us that finally in the end decide we are going to do this. Everyone else is just sitting there watching us talking about how dumb it is.
Chris is rolling over in his grave right now.
Oh, yeah. The first thing we start off with.
Now, I have to tell the audience here that two of the people, one of them is you and the other one is sorry, are incredibly competitive people.
Yeah.
Highly, highly competitive people. So go on.
Anyway, we start off with 24-ounce chicken kebabs. This is what we start with, a 24-ounce chicken kebab.
A pound and a half.
Of chicken.
On a kebab.
I do two sides of mashed potatoes and gravy. You know how like restaurants will bring you those little loaves of bread? We each eat a loaf of bread apiece. We each eat a piece of a pork kebab apiece, which I worked out to be about a fourth of a pound of pork. We each eat a chicken strip apiece, because the deal is if one of us eats it, the others have to as well. So we continue going through this. We eat this. You know, we keep eating as we going through. Finally, we start to talk about, well, let's do Ted Drew's next. And the guy that's suggesting
that's it... That's a local ice cream place for
yeah,
anyone.
Custard.
Yeah.
The guy that's suggesting it is by far the most lactose intolerant person there. And he's saying, okay, let's do Ted Drew's next to finish this. So the person...
So you've had like almost 10 pounds of meat so far.
Yeah, we have eaten a lot of food. And the guy sitting next to him decides, okay, I don't want to keep doing this. I don't want to do Ted Drew's. So he's like, what can I do to stop them? So he reaches out and he grabs a thing of butter off the table. He peels it back. He takes a spoon and he eats it. So me and the other guy are sitting here looking at each other. We look over at the guy that ate the butter. We look at each other. He looks at me with this kind of look of fear on his face. And my spoon's gone already.
Forget starving kids in India. There are starving kids at table five.
So my spoon's gone already. So I reach down. I grab the butter. I peel it off. And I lick out the cup of butter.
Oh.
And the other guy just has this horrid look on his face, and he looks at his butter and he's like, I hate you. And he grabs a spoon and he eats the butter. I have no drink at this point, and they're not coming around with another refill.
Just so I'm clear here, the lactose intolerant guy is trying to get out of Ted Drews by eating butter?
No, the lactose intolerant guy actually was the one that suggested Ted Drews. It's the guy next to him that wants to get out of this. So at this point, the guy that wants to get out was like, okay, hold on, I have to go to the bathroom for a minute. He gets up, he comes back, and this is a guy that basically, he makes you look like you're fat, Dan. You're a very thin guy. This guy was a stick. As he's coming back, we see the food that he's eaten is lumped up in his chest on the way down.
Oh.
It looks like a snake that has swallowed a rat.
I love the look of Pat's face.
It is something that
revulsion.
It is something that anatomically should not be possible.
No, it shouldn't be. And he's probably done permanent damage to his esophagus by
he one has, hopes.
He has never been the same since this incident. So,
like mentally. Oh,
he sits back down. He's like, okay, I'm going to try one last thing. Reaches out, grabs the salt, pours it into his hand, has a handful of salt, and licks it from his hand. So I grab the salt shaker, pour it into my hand, do the same thing. At this point, we're all three looking at each other. It's like, okay, if you're not stopping, I'm not stopping. Ted Drews. So we get in cars. None of us are driving because none of us are capable of driving at this point.
You're and not drunk.
You're no.
Just,
we just...
Just stupid.
Yeah, we are all feeling pretty bad at this point. I'm sitting in the car on the way there. I'm kind of holding my stomach for every bump. And I let out the biggest, nastiest belch I've let out in my life. And I'm doing the... You know how that thing you do when you've belched and you're kind of, you know, pursing your lips a little bit and have that horrible taste in your mouth? I'm like, oh. Buttery.
No, so, no, I don't. I do not have the foggiest idea what you are talking about.
You know,
just to be clear.
Quick tangent. One time I ate a spoonful of butter on accident. I was at Denny's, and Denny's used to do a, or Shoney's used to do a breakfast buffet,
yes.
Which Dan can fuck up a breakfast buffet.
Oh, yes. You set me loose on some bacon.
So what I did is I'm going through and I'm like, oh, look, whipped cream. Awesome. And it was a little ish on the yellow side, but the lighting was always bad in those places. And I take a big old spoonful, put it on my plate. I take it back to my table and I stick a spoon in there and I stick a big old spoonful in my mouth. And I start just kind of working it. I'm like, that was an entire spoonful of whipped butter.
So I understood what that tasted like after I let my belch out. Mm-hmm. And we pull into Ted Drews. All of us get in line. The guy that wanted out of it finally says, okay, guys, I've had enough. I'm going to get the smallest thing they have, and I'm done. So me and the other guy are still, it's like, okay, I'm still in. Are you still in? Yeah, I'm still in. I'm not stopping. So we go up and we order the biggest concrete they have, which at Ted Drews is like a 32-ounce or something. This thing is huge. And the first guy gets his first, and he goes over and he starts eating. And I have to wait around in line, because this place is fairly packed. I finally get mine, I go over and I start eating, and he looks over at me at one point, and he goes, you better hurry up, champ. I'm almost done. He shows me his cup's half empty, and I turn mine towards him, and it's down to a fourth left. I never thought I would ever see a man come that close to crying as he did when he saw my cup. So we finish this thing, and the whole time, he's sitting there, and the first guy who's still feeling pretty bad, he just takes his hand and slaps him in the stomach and shakes it. He's like, how's it going, champ? How you doing? How you doing? And at this point, we're both standing because we're too afraid to sit down. We're not sure if we can get back up if we sit down. And we finally finish these two concretes. And I was like, okay, let's go throw these away. Let's have a talk. And at this point, everyone's like, okay, where are we going to go next? Let's do Quick Trip. Let's do hot dogs. And we get over to the trash can, and we dump the cups in there. We're looking at each other, and he's like, I don't want to keep doing this, but I'm not going to stop. You're not going to stop either. We're going to die. I'm like, no, if you're going to keep going, I feel pretty bad right now, but I'm going to keep going too. They want hot dogs. We're going to do hot dogs. Just like, what if we just walk back together and say, we're done. It's a tie. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm ready for this to be done. We'll walk back together. We'll just agree to a tie. But you did have the weaker sides. I did have the mashed potatoes and gravy. So, you know, but it's a tie. But I did eat more. So we do eventually, we walk back over. It's like, okay, we're done. It's a tie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stop before we die.
Pat, to close this out.
Oh, wait. I have one more story, and Dan, I want you to tell this story.
Okay.
It is the time that we were in Dave's basement and we performed a satanic ritual.
Oh my gosh, let me see if I even remember this story.
So he was having a friend of his come over, and we're all into role-playing. We're all, like, weird guys, right? And his friend is very, very normal, and he's been telling his buddy for a couple weeks now.
That's right, it was a friend, not his parents.
Yeah, about how weird we were, about how strange we were, just really building him up and stuff. So we're over there hanging out at his house, and he's like, okay, guys, I want you to freak this dude out. We're all going to do it together, right? And I think his girlfriend was over there or something, or maybe his sister got involved, I forget. And he pulls out this knife, and it's like, I've never seen a knife like this before or since. It's, imagine a folding knife. You know, you got the handle, and the blade is in the handle, and you just flip it. You don't even press a button, and it flips open. Except that the blade is 3 times longer than the handle. And the blade sticks out of the bottom. It's very, very strange. But when you do it, I mean, it comes up with a fa-funk like that when you flip it open because the blade is so big. And then he's got, like, you know, typical gamer nerd stuff. He's got, like, a chalice or something. And he's like, okay, we're going to take this chalice. We're going to fill it with water. And we're gonna put the hairspray in the water. And we're going to light that up. And then we're going to put on these robes. And he produces these, like, black hooded robes. Now, mind you, this house is already creepy as it is. It's an old South St. Louis house, and it's all brick, and the neighborhood is sort of this American old-style gothic thing, and it is supposedly haunted and all that. Well, his parents, being old-school Catholics, got a priest to come in and perform an exorcism, and they had above every single entrance, every single window, every single opening to the outside was a metal, like a
metal St. Christopher.
Yeah, metal St. Christopher. And that was nailed to the framework of whatever it was. And so there's already stories and stuff about the house. And he's like, here, put these robes on. No clue where he got the robes from. And he's like, I'm gonna do a pentagram in a circle with the hairspray in the middle of this thing. And you guys just say some bullshit about, like, we're doing the ritual and blah, 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 and we're doing chanting and stuff. And right when the guy comes down, and we'll freak him out. And so that's precisely what happened. It's like the guy came over, we heard him, and parents were showing him down. Parents weren't in on it. And so we had everything set up, and we were in the side room of the basement, and all the lights were out. We had candles and shit going, and Dan's there in your deep baritone Dan bedroom voice, which was actually satanic cult leader voice at the time. And I'm sitting there, we have this chalice, and we light it up so the guy's coming down, and Dan's saying, like, oh, bullshit, in the ages of darkness, like some real, like, a Robert E. Howard Conan bullshit. It's like, oh, ages of darkness and the rise of Satan and blah, 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 like that. And we're like, passing this cup around, and we blow the fire up. We drink it, kind of. I actually did let a little pass my lips and burnt a little, but oh well. And at least it wasn't like lead poisoning or something. So we pass
A little lead's good for you.
Apparently. So we pass it around, and then right at the culmination of it, somebody lights the pentagram on fire, and then Dan takes out of his robes this f***ing knife. And I mean, it's just like dead silence. There's a burning pentagram on the floor. All this humming a bullshit went on, and all of a sudden, dead silence, and shunk. Bring forth the sacrifice. And this kid's like, what in the shit? What is this? And then we just lost it. We couldn't hold it together any longer. We just started all cracking up.
Patrick, close this episode out. Just because you don't talk enough, I'm going to give you an opportunity. You can start with either Johan or Wayne. I want you to go around the table and judge every person here. So pick who you're going to start with.
Wow. Well, I'll start with Johan since he's our honored guest this week.
Okay.
Judgment.
Yes.
Like I said, I'm just you're all hooligans. You're lucky to be alive. Honest to God. I mean,
it's talent, not luck.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I just don't even know. That's just, it's staggering. It staggers the mind.
Great. Well, as for the rest of you guys, have a pleasant evening. Dream deeply of setting yourself on fire, frightening your neighbors, cleaning up eggs beneath your feet. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.